the children, if they like, they can go to the other room.
I would like anybody to suggest a topic, or maybe we just can go with questions. That would be very nice.
Well, have a topic.
I will need somebody to put, since we have a very successful website and there are thousands of people listening to these discourses and classes, so I would like that somebody takes care of putting this machine in front of the mouth of the person who wants to do that. You want to do that? Yeah. Just in front of Prabhu. Okay.
Sorry, I'll find it here in a second.
What is that for?
It's one of the songs, and I thought I remember which one it was. But
yeah, but the book, what book is
it? Oh, this is Sharanagati and Geetavali.
You had spoken a little bit about the sutras of Yoga of Patanjali, and I was thinking Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that in any case, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Maybe you could speak a little bit about that, but he found his topic.
So, okay, we can first talk to him. He came first.
Okay.
Okay, you put a question, you just push the
recorder here, and that would be enough. Yeah, be a yogi. What means to be a yogi? Well, there are different meanings on the word. Depends how technical we want to be. The general meaning of a yogi is somebody who strives for going back to Godhead. Because yoga means to reunite with something. So the word yoga is very interesting because from the outset give us the teaching that there must be two persons, the jiva and the super jiva, the individual soul and the super soul, because the verb unite suppose somebody who unite to somebody else. So then you cannot unite with yourself. So reunion means two people. One who lost the link and the other one who is waiting for the other person to find back the path back to Godhead. So the word yoga immediately gives you the idea that there is a God and there is the soul. And this soul must be spiritual. because something material cannot unite with God, with spiritual. So the word yoga not only tells us that there is a God and that we are different from God, but also that we are spirit soul. So a lot of meanings in the world. And so the process of reunion with the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be different nature from matter, because God is spiritual. And this is the whole logic behind yoga, that means to reunite with Supreme Law by what? By staying in contact with something that has the same quality of the person we want to reunite with. If God is spiritual, then we need to be in contact with something spiritual to refine to find again our lost spiritual nature. So to be really technical, we never lost our spiritual nature, of course. This is just a logic, just a discourse to say that we forgot what we are. And if we stay in contact with something that is the same nature of God and our lost self, then we got purified and we go back to Krishna, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Yoga Sutra gives one path, which is very similar to the Bhakti path. Actually, there is right in the beginning of the Yoga Sutra, in the first chapter, which is Samadhipada, is called. There is one verse, which is Ishvara Pranidhana. The sutras in the Yoga Sutra is very short. It's not like Bhagavata or Bhagavad Gita, it's very long. This is very common in many of the most philosophical works that are very, how you say something, very, how you say something, concise. Something very concise. And there is a reason why they are concise. So this verse, Ishvara Pranidhana, Ishvara Pranidhana means that the goal of yoga, the goal of that book, the goal of the Yoga Sutra is to reunite yoga with the Supreme through bhakti, because pranidhana means bhakti, means devotion to God. And the Yoga Sutra is like a second Bhagavad Gita, but seen from another perspective. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting because Patanjali, who is Brahma's grandson, he is the son of Atri. Atri is the great son of Brahma. So Patanjali is a very important personality in our tradition. And he wanted, like all the acharyas, wanted to preach to a certain class of persons. And there will always be people who wants to be powerful. They want to become very, very powerful. And so he gave a very particular way of becoming powerful, but at the same time getting purified. Just like the Vedas, since there are always the people who wants to enjoy matter, so the Vedas give people the sense enjoyment and purification at the same time. So you see, like Krishna is extremely intelligent, and through various scriptures he gives various paths, but the aim or the goal is always the same. It's just different perspective, different ways, or different sadhanas, different disciplines. So reading the Vedas, reading the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is another one. Most of the Vedanta Sutra is very concise. Now I will speak why they are so concise. The Vedanta Sutra also, most of the sutras are very short, even only one word. That's all. And the book itself is very small. It's smaller than the Bhagavad Gita. But even the Vedanta Yoga Sutra is relatively small. It's less than 200. Oh my God, my memory is really fading away. I think it's less than 200 shloka, that's all. Bhagavad Gita is 700. You know, and the Vedanta Sutra is a 559 sutras, that's all. But if you really want to explain the Vedanta Sutra, it comes an encyclopedia. Because every word is it's like playing with mathematics. Everything is logically linked to history and philosophy, to other books. So if you have not read the Upanishad, if you have not read the Puranas, you don't understand what he's saying. Because everything has a logic that is called the context. You have to know the context, then you have to know the whole Vedic literature, otherwise you don't understand. So and the Yoga Sutra is not an exception. Either you know very well the Upanishad and the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutra and the Puranas, or your translation and explanation will be a big mess. It will be just a disturbance in society, like Srila Prabhupada often says. So be a yogi means dedicate your life to Krishna consciousness. That's the meaning. That's where what it means when Krishna said, always be a yogi. So we are going to give a course on the Vedanta Sutra. That's my old dream, to give a course on Vedanta Sutra. I don't know if I will ever make it to give it. Anyway, and we are going to give a study course on the Yoga Sutra quite soon. Who will participate? Raise the hands. Okay, there will be a little fee to pay. Who will participate? Okay, thank you very much. It's going to start in a month and a half, that's all. Because it doesn't take much time for me to organize the course, because I began translate, and since I studied some Sanskrit, so I did some translation and explanation of the Yoga Sutra, and I began more than 20 years ago. So I already have 3-4 for the book already ready. It's just that it's Italian, and then you have to squeeze it into 10 lessons. You know, to squeeze such a book in 10 lessons, that's a real difficult part. That's what is taking me much time, a lot of time. So anyway, we are going to do it in 10 lessons, and it's going to be quite a challenge, but it's going to be nectar, I assure you. And it's going to be very nice. So
you wrote a transcript from 20 years ago, or a class preparation from 20 years ago?
No, it was a book.
And when I stopped, I stopped it after 2 years that I began the book, and it was already 400 pages. So it was a big book, you know, and so I wrote it 20 years ago. I was a kid, you know, a little more than a kid, so it should be, you know, revised and corrected. I'm a little different now, so I can see that I was quite young and passionate. Something should be should be changed, but it's going to be a lot of transcendental fun. This course on the Yoga Sutra.
You want me to see if anybody has any questions?
Okay, any other questions, please?
You're asking a question. It's not that you have to ask a question because you don't know the answer. You have to ask a question because you are curious to know what I'm going to say about that. Because you may have put the same question to 10 people, and you see that the 11 guys, going to say something totally different. And every time you make the same question, you hear different, because this is a spiritual world. We are individuals, so we think differently. We have different perspectives. And this is not material, this is spiritual. In the spiritual world, you know, you find the gopis saying, I want to embrace Krishna, because he's a nice boy, and if you talk to a gopa, says, "What? I'm not going to embrace Krishna. You know, I want to play with him." You know, so he says, "No, this is wrong, embracing Krishna." And the gopi say, "You want to play with Krishna? But no, Krishna is so lovable. You have to kiss him, you have to embrace him, you have to touch his, touch his hand, you know." So you see, like different perspectives.
I would like to know the relevance of Yoga Sutras in reference to Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, because when we talk about scriptures, at least within ISKCON, we talk about, you know, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita and other literatures, but we have not given so much importance to the Yoga Sutras. Can you please explain the relevance as it applies to the rest of the other scriptures that we have? How is it important?
We have so many nice literatures.
Okay. Well, there are many scriptures we have not given much importance. Like there are many translations of the Brahma Samhita. But you know that we talk much about the Brahma Samhita. We have the Chaitanya Mangala. We have thousands of scriptures. There's thousands of Krishna we don't even know the existence. So the point is that Yoga Sutra, just like the Vedanta Sutra, just think to the Vedanta Sutra. In India, you cannot be a serious, recognized school if you don't have a explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is like the base of culture. If you don't understand the Vedanta Sutra, then you don't know philosophy. That is it. And we barely speak about the Vedanta Sutra. And the reason is that there are many reasons. One of the reasons is that Vedanta Sutra is extremely complex. And when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he didn't find Brahmanas, you know, that know who is who and what is what. He found a bunch of hippies, you know, playing the guitar with beard and a ribbon, you know, like this. And then we civilized a little bit. And now we are, they are very respectable. I'm still a little savage, you know, but most of Prabhupada's disciples now are extremely respectable Vaishnavas, pure and knowledgeable, all qualities, and not only Prabhupada's disciples, of course. So now, after more than 40 years of Prabhupada having come, then we may start to talk about meanings and Sanskrit and Yoga Sutra and Vedanta Sutra, because we have grown up. But at that time, we had a hard time understanding the Bhagavad Gita. We didn't know who Krishna was and who Arjuna was. I remember listening to a class from Srila Prabhupada that he gave in 1965, just at the beginning, maybe a couple of months after. So he started to talk about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, and he was looking to the 3-4 hippies he had in front of him, and he realized that they didn't know who Krishna was, and they didn't know what the Bhagavad Gita was. They didn't know anything, nothing, zero. So he was a little awkward by, oh my God, that's mine. I was going to say, please turn it off, that's mine. I'm so sorry.
So, what you say that the reason that you do all the sutras is to have a good image?
People, or they have some benefit, some spiritual benefit?
I think that this is a very good question, actually. Because there is a direct relationship between what we say, but also how we say it. What I mean is that sometimes we want people to understand exactly what we say, and some other time
while you speak, you are a very elderly devotee, you know this. Everybody who has been a preacher for some time knows that. But sometimes you realize that the people are not understanding what you say. So at that point, what do you do? You try to impress the person by making them understand that at least the Hare Krishna, the Krishna's devotees, are not just people who dance and haribol and, you know, kind of strange, you can say it, no? Naive kind of sentiment of chanting and dancing. That we have philosophy, that we have a tradition, that we are philosophers. So sometimes people do not understand, but I understand that we are intelligent, that we have culture, that we know history, that we know philosophy. So, and this is very important, because if people respect you, then they will listen to you more attentively, and this is what we want. Sometimes people tell me, we don't understand what you say, what Prabhupada says, no, but we understand that you have a lot to say. So we come back in the hope that next time we understand a little more. So my interest in the Yoga Sutra came because many people are interested in the yoga. They didn't know Bhagavad Gita. Many still do not know Bhagavad Gita, but everybody knows the yoga. Everybody. There is no a person in the world basically who does not know exists the yoga. And the Yoga Sutra, everybody who does some yoga in the thousands of yoga studios that we have, yoga centers we have in the world, they know the Yoga Sutra, they know Patanjali, but they don't know the philosophy, because when they open the book they will close it after 2 or 3 pages, because it's tough, it's difficult to understand it. And it's difficult to understand it for 2 reasons. First, because it's objectively not easy, because the way Patanjali was writing, was speaking. And the second, because the explanations are absurd. 99.9% of the explanations do not make sense. It's just people who want to speak just to speak, not because they actually know, because they don't have a real guru, they don't have a bona fide tradition, so they cannot know the real yoga. So because we have been schooled, we have been educated by Srila Prabhupada, we know what Patanjali meant to say. And when Patanjali say Ishvara Pranidhana, we know that it means bhakti. They don't know that it means bhakti, but we know. So we are going to explain it, and people appreciate. So, and anyway, it's not that I'm making a big thing about the Yoga Sutra or anything. You know, if you ask me, I would prefer to give a Bhagavad Gita course or Bhagavatam course like this. But since I know that many knowledgeable devotees already gave it or are even giving it right now, I want to give something different so people come to hear something different. So, Sri Prabhupada first.
The Vedanta Sutras are Shruti Shastras. Yeah. These are Shrutis and.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Explain the difference.
The Itihasas, the Mahabharata, and so on and so forth, I believe, are Smritis.
Technically, only the Vedas with the Upanishad, because most of the Upanishads are part of the Vedas. The Vedas are divided in 4. Each Veda is divided in 4, and the fourth section are called the Upanishad. And most of the Upanishads we know, although not all of them, are actually part of the Vedas. So technically only the Vedas with the Upanishad are Shrutis. Somebody puts the Itihasas, and Itihasas basically the Puranas. The Puranas are Itihasas. Somebody puts the Mahabharata as a Purana, although technically it is not. You know, technically, there are 18 Puranas, and we know what they are, which one they are, and we have a certain number Upa Puranas, which are Puranas. Some of the Upa Puranas are even very large. You know, we have, for instance, the biggest Purana. I think it's the Shiva Purana, and the Shiva Purana is almost. Is almost a 55,000 verses. You know, the Bhagavatam is 18,000. The Mahabharata is under 10,000 verses. So the Shiva Purana is a little more than half of the Mahabharata. So you take the Shiva Purana and you make some explanation that you know it does. It takes the whole of your life. So Shruti means the original knowledge was handed down by families, spiritual families of sages like Bhrigu and Atri and all the others. And through guru and disciple, the Vedas were passed down, and that was a system. The guru chose a disciple and he would teach him the Veda, the original verse with his explanation, with the guru explanation. So we have a quite large literature in that sense. Smriti comes from Smaran, from Smri, which means to remember. To remember doesn't mean remember because you heard and you remember. But you had learned from the original shastra. They are like commentaries of the original. So actually, somebody put the Vedanta Sutra as a Shruti, and somebody put it as Smriti. So it's a question of classification. Technically, only the four Vedas are Shruti.
The question sometimes arises that Shrutis are more important. And hence, when we give importance to the Puranas, especially the Bhagavad Purana, and it's part of the Smriti Shastras, and they say that it is not. Why do you give more importance to the Puranas when the Vedas are to be considered more important? And it becomes a difficult thing, because as such, I mean, we don't have so much information about the Vedas, though in the Bhagavad Gita, pretty much Krishna kicks out the Vedas and says, rise above the flowery words of the Vedas. So it kind of creates some confusion, but yeah. It's kind of difficult to explain that.
They say when you get these type of questions, you have to study the Yoga Sutra, you have to study the Vedanta Sutra. Otherwise, you have to say to this intelligent man, I don't know. So that's why we have to study. Because we cannot say we don't know. We have to know. That's our culture. We are part of this tradition. So, to answer to your question, is that you should ask to the persons, what are the Vedas? The Vedas are teachings of gurus. That's what is the Vedas. You have disciples putting a question, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, putting the question to the sage, the guru, and the guru answers. So that's the Vedas. So what is the guru is saying? He's giving his own explanation. You know, the four Vedas, if you go looking around in history, you will find thousands of Vedas, because each guru, each sage, each heavenly sage, that means the sons of Brahma or his grandsons and or the great sages, gave their own explanation of the original knowledge. The original knowledge came from Vishnu originally. So we have different Vedas according to paramparas. So we have a huge, vast body of knowledge. So the Vedas are explanations of the absolute truth. So what is the Smriti? The Smriti are the explanations of the Vedas.
So why one explanation should be inferior to another explanation? You cannot understand the original. You could not understand the original truth from Vishnu if such and such sage would not explain it to you. So you take the Veda and try to understand. You will not understand. You will not understand because the Vedas were specifically spoken for other ages. You had to know a big body of knowledge to understand the original Vedas. And we don't have that because the Vedas were not spoken for Kali Yuga, especially for the people of Kali Yuga. The Vedas can be understood according to our culture only by Brahmanas. Vedas were not given to Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, so what to speak about other classes, inferior classes, only to Brahmanas. And Brahmanas, those Brahmanas, in their turn, would go in the middle of the people explaining that knowledge in a Smriti fashion. So the Vedas that the common people will hear and learn are the Smritis, but it's the same knowledge just adapted to the level of understanding and comprehension of the people. So what are the Smritis? The Smritis are the Vedas adapted to our level or capacity of understanding. So the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, etc., and all the books of the Goswamis, all the books of our Parampara, the books from Madhvacharya, Ramanuja, and all our great Acharyas, our history, then these books are for us. But you try to read a book from Madhvacharya and then come back and tell me if you understood anything. Very, very difficult. You try to read the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, which is, you know, 100 and something years ago, less than 100 years ago, while Sarasvati Goswami was teaching. Try to understand what he says. You don't understand. We don't understand. So you see how ages change men, change people, and that's why we have the parampara. Otherwise, why we have parampara? Why we don't have only one guru? And through the ages, we read the gurus, the original gurus' books. But that is not a system, because people change. So that's why we need the parampara, because the guru is the person who will teach according to the level of understanding, of the level of spiritual advancement of the people. It is not that our tradition, our school, is taught with Srila Prabhupada, then we are going to have thousands of gurus, and in the future, and for the next 100 years, we are going to have the parampara will come down again. Because in 100 years, who knows what people will understand in Srila Prabhupada books. You see? So that's why Srila Prabhupada said, you should all preach. So then people will say, why we should preach, you know? Just give him the book. But Prabhupada didn't say that. Prabhupada said, no, you should preach Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class, go and make conferences in the schools, here and there. Why? Because we understand people, we know, because we are the same, we born in the same place, we understand. And as a preacher, we know what it means to preach in different countries. You know, when I go to my native country, it's immediate. I start to preach to people. I don't even have to, not even have to think for a second what I'm going to say to this man, because I don't know who he is, what he thinks, how he feels. You know, if I want to make people laugh or people to be sad or people thoughtful in my native country, I know what I have to say because I born there. But when I change place, you know, sometimes I feel that I'm not saying the right thing. I'm not saying it in the right way. Because there is no immediate symphony. Like preaching to Indians is one thing, preaching to Americans another thing, preaching to British is a completely other thing, preaching to French, my God. You know, it's like, oh, my God, you know. And this is This is why we need to have preachers all over the world. So actually, there is no real qualitative difference between Shruti and Smriti. It's just a traditional difference. But in terms of quality, there is no difference. It's just you have, what is the Bhasha? Bhasha is an explanation. It's like Srila Prabhupada, purpose means Bhasha. We had the Govinda Bhasha. And then we had the Tikka. What is the Tikka? The Tikka is an explanation of the explanation. And then we have the explanation of the, I don't remember the Sanskrit, there is a term. The explanation of the explanation of the explanation. What I'm doing now is explanation of the explanation. I try to explain what my, I not try to explain what Bhagavad Gita, I don't know what Bhagavad Gita says. I understand something about what my spiritual master says. So I'm trying to explain what he says. So this is the system that Krishna wanted. Evam parampara pratam imam rajasayo vidu. It's an eternal system. He spoke to Arjuna, not to us. So Arjuna spoke, and then we have the whole parampara. And today we have Srila Prabhupada, and then we have his disciples, and then we have the disciples, etc. This is the system.
Any question?
Well, I had two questions, but one of them you answered already. But one just so what the Lord directly spoke, like for instance, he spoke to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami wrote the Nectar of Devotion based on what Lord Chaitanya told him. So that's Smriti. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
The difference between Shruti and Smriti is very, how you say, it's very subtle. Because if you ask me that I am trying to be a Rupanuga, you know, in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I will tell you, yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of God. He spoke, then it's Shruti, it's not Smriti. Then Sanatana Goswami explained it, and that is Smriti, because he's telling what is wrote. But if you go to a Sanskrit professor or to a learned, a scholarly Indian or any other Hindu temple, they say, yes, the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu is Shruti. He says, the man will think of, you know, this one doesn't even know what he's talking about. Because technically, Shruti is the Vedas, that's all. The four Vedas. So, although we know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, we have to be careful where we say and what we say to who we say. Otherwise people will take us as ignorance, and it's not good. It's not good for our preaching. Especially if you preach to Indian people who know these things. Now, if you go in Italy, you don't get a question like this. He doesn't know what Shruti is, and Smriti is, they don't know. But if you go to India, better you know what's Smriti and what is Shruti. Otherwise they will take you as a clown. It's not good for Srila Prabhupada that people think that his disciples are uneducated.
So my question is, what you will be teaching will help bridge the gap between people who do not understand the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita? Is the study that you're proposing, is that going to help bridge that gap of knowledge?
You mean the Yoga Sutra course?
Well, in this Yoga Sutra course, we are going to give the what I call the Bhaktivedanta school purport or explanation. Srila Prabhupada, when we say the Sender Bhaktivedanta purports, it's not Bhaktivedanta Swami purports. Prabhupada meant something different. Bhaktivedanta is a school. The Bhaktivedanta purports are the purports given in the light or the conclusion anta, or the knowledge which is bhakti. Bhakti Veda Anta. So Bhakti Vedanta purports are those purports given from that perspective, that the anta of Veda knowledge is bhakti, is devotional service. So what I'm trying, what I will very humbly try to do is the same. I will try to explain the Yoga Sutra from that light, not by falsifying or by giving a speculated interpretation of the Yoga Sutra, because that would be dishonest. We should not force a meaning that is not there, because otherwise few faithful people will accept, few ignorant people will accept, because they don't know anyway. But if somebody listens to you who is, you know, who knows, then we say, oh, these people are, you know, they don't know what they don't know. It's just, that's a farce. And sometimes being dishonest is worse than to be ignorant. It's better not to say something, they say it false. Because even with the best intention, I think that cheating is always bad, unless very exceptional case, you know, like, you know, we find in the Mahabharata a few cases like Yudhishthira saying it. But this is really very special cases. When we teach, we have to be honest. And if the Yoga Sutra will give, we find in the Yoga Sutra a verse speaking about bhakti, we should talk about bhakti. If it doesn't, then we have to be very honest. It's like, that's why many teachers avoid, for instance, the Vedanta Sutra. Why? Because it's so wide open to so many explanations, because of the very nature of the sutras themselves, that they avoid, because they, it's just like when you go preach in Catholic, very Catholic countries, better you don't talk about Jesus Christ, because they know Jesus Christ as much as you, maybe they even more. If you talk about that, immediately, boom, no, I disagree, finished, the class is finished, the peace is finished, begins the anxiety. You have to explain, no, because Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee, and we have to start giving it. Better to avoid. So better to avoid something that you already know will raise opposition. So either we have a lot of time that we can prove that that particular verse is referring to bhakti or to a specific history, a story or something, or better you avoid it. The Vedanta Sutra is made of very few words, very few words. So to explain one word is difficult, because there are a lot of context. It is the paragraph context, there is the chapter context, you know, there is the book context, and there is the traditional context, there is the historical context, and you have to know it all. Because otherwise, better you don't talk about these difficult books. So one of the reasons why our acharyas avoided the Yoga Sutra, first of all, is because Yoga Sutra is brought for yogis, that particular yogis that we know, because on fourth chapter, Yoga Sutra is divided in four padas, which is four chapters. Pada means also chapter. The whole of the third chapter, which is called Vibhuti Pada, is dedicated to yogic powers, perfections, the siddhis, what we call the siddhis, you know. So it's a long thing, you know. So long thing means about, I think it should be about 50 or 60 sutras, 50 or 60 sutras of siddhis. So what do we have to do with the siddhis, you know? We don't want the siddhis, but what we want is something different. So, but the other three chapters is full of philosophy, is full of bhakti, is full of things that the better we know how to control ourselves, how to control our feelings, how to meditate. It's very technical, very interesting. So the same teachings that we find in the other three chapters of the Yoga Sutra, we find them in the Bhagavad Gita, we find them in the Bhagavatam, we find them everywhere else. So what's the point? What's the point with the added difficulty of a difficult book with difficult expression and with a book that is destined to yogis? So this is why not many acharyas dedicated time to the Yoga Sutras. Prabhu?
Just to clarify my doubts. So this explanation based on the school of bhakti is that commentary, is that the Bhakti Sutras? Is that what is termed as the Bhakti Sutras? I believe it's in one of the purports of Srila Prabhupada, or one of the books, I believe, the Nectarian Ocean of the Holy Names. There is a mention of the word Bhakti Sutras. Are these the explanations of the Vedanta Sutras based on from the school of Bhakti, from the perspective of Bhakti, or are the Bhakti Sutras a different? Are those a different texts completely? Yeah.
Bhakti Sutra, there is no book called Bhakti Sutra which is part of the classic tradition. There are books which are called Bhakti Sutras but are not Upanishad or Puranas or part. So there may be some teacher who called this book Bhakti Sutras, but it's not traditionally part of our tradition. And of course, since I am a Vaishnava, a Bhakta, I will give any explanation I give is from that perspective, because otherwise, what kind of devotee I would be? Upanishad means upa, down. And Anisha, Isha, Lord. Anisha, no Lord. So humble. So you sit down humbly and listen. That's the meaning of the word Upanishad. Means to sit down at the feet of the spiritual master with a humble Anisha state of consciousness and listen. Mataji?
What's the prerequisite to understand Yoga Sutras? What is the prerequisite to understand Yoga Sutras? Do you have to have some knowledge, some basis, some grounds to understand this subject? Or are we there yet?
To come to this course of Yoga Sutra, there is a zero prerequisite. The only prerequisite that you have is that you have to come with the desire to learn. And some part of that, those lessons will be very easy, and some part you have to be a little attentive, because otherwise you'll get lost. So anyway, we'll try to be more easier as possible, and more, and of course at any moment you can just put a question and say, Prabhu, you lost me, please get me back, because I don't know where I am. So it's quite technical, but it's very, very sweet, because you learn a lot of things about psychology, about how mind works, how to deal with the mind. You know, that's the yoga. The whole point of the yoga is to control the mind. You cannot meditate if you can't control the mind, because you cannot meditate, because the mind will go somewhere else. So you have to control it. The Yoga Sutra gives a lot of suggestions, instructions, how to control the mind. So it's very interesting. There is a lot of psychology also. It teaches a lot of traps. It tells you a lot of traps that the yogi very often falls in. So it's interesting. In my opinion, it's interesting.
your opinion on Iyengar's translation and commentary?
The what?
Iyengar translation and commentary about the Yoga Sutras.
I think yes. Iyengar is he's a kind of yoga guru. He's asking what's your opinion about his translation.
I haven't read them. I don't know.
Because he's a Vaishnava. He's not a Gaudiya Vaishnava, but he's a Vaishnava.
To give an opinion to somebody, I should know about it. Somebody, I should read this book. If you have it, you give it to me. I can give you.
Spanish.
I read Spanish. I read Spanish. Then I can give you an opinion, because Mataji.
I haven't understand the point of studying the Yoga Sutras. If it's a question, if the point of preaching is so that everybody knows Krishna, I have been understanding that you cannot change someone because of your knowledge. Someone changed only because of the purity. And Prabhupada is totally pure, so he can change everybody. What is the point of studying Yoga Sutras if Prabhupada gives?
Well, actually, I've been suggested, why don't you do a Yoga Sutra? Because, for the people. Because everyone knows Yoga Sutras, so a lot of people will come, which not necessarily are devotees. A course on the Bhagavad Gita, basically devotees will come. A course on the Yoga Sutra, even people who are not devotees will come. So we want to attract as many people as possible. But you see the difference between an explanation by a bhakta and explanation by a non-bhakta. This is really different, because the perspective, the sensibility, which is sensibility to words, sensibility to historical facts, sensibility to the philosophical meanings. You know, only devotees have this kind of sensibility, is correct? Sensibility. A devotee can explain anything from the bhakti point of view, and so this kind of sensibility, again, it's something that is quite interesting. I feel just like I felt wonderful, you know, to read Prabhupada commenting things from, you know, since as a boy I was studying philosophy, so I knew philosophy quite well. So when I read Prabhupada speaking about Socrates, speaking about Aristotle, I was really interested. And the way he was explaining what I knew, because I read it before becoming a devotee, but I never thought. For instance, there is one book by Socrates, who is actually Plato's, you know, writing down. Somebody says even Socrates never existed. It was just a personality invented by Plato. Anyway, doesn't really matter if it was actually, if actually existed or not. But there is a book called the, I don't know, in Italian it's a Fedone, but maybe it's the Fedo or something like that. No philosophers here. Nobody's read Plato. Anyway, this book, I wrote this book 4 times when I was a kid. And it's like Bhagavad Gita. The soul is eternal, it goes from one body to the other, and it goes according to what he does. Read it. It's unbelievable, you know. But I never got it, and I never understood. So I thought, like, I didn't believe in reincarnation. I was a kid, because a reincarnation, I die and this body becomes something else. Because it wasn't clear about it wasn't clear the difference between the soul and the body. He explained it. He was explaining it, but I couldn't understand. Why? Because it wasn't a bhakta. A bhakta not only gives information, but it puts inside the information a quality that makes you understand that only bhaktas have. And you see how many people translated and explained the Bhagavad Gita. How many devotees produced. And see what Srila Prabhupada Bhagavad Gita did. Millions of devotees all over the world. And he continues to do it devotee. Why? Because that is a Bhakta Bhagavad Gita. It's a Bhagavad Gita from a devotee. And look at the Bhagavad Gita of others. You know, the unborn within yourself, and actually Krishna never existed, and you are Krishna, and Arjuna is the false you, and it's a carnival of speculations. You don't understand. You cannot understand, because they are not. They did. How a person who didn't understand can make you understand? So this course. It's a course of something you never heard. If you want to come, you come, otherwise you don't come. But the point is that to attract people listening to Vaishnava Siddhanta seen from another perspective. Otherwise you wait for the next course, which will be the ABC of Hare Krishna movement. Which I will explain why this and why that, you know. I will.
So I think personally, I think it's from what you're saying and just from seeing all the different yoga people that we come in contact with, because they really, Iyengar and all of them, when you read their commentaries, it's not
Iyengar.
Yeah, Iyengar. She's talking about Iyengar. Even you read any of their translations, all these different yogis, and pretty much, even though he may be a Vaishnava, it comes off as an impersonal. There's no devotional service being understood from the whole thing. Maybe I'm wrong about Iyengar, but from what I have his book, and I didn't get any devotional service out of what I read. So I think that if somebody actually did, if you did put a book out about yoga, that would be big, because there's no yoga, there's no bhakta yogis books like that, and that's why people don't even read those books past the breathing exercises, because it's just like you're saying, it's just all this carnival of stuff. I think a book would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I think a book would be really powerful to have it out there. And
absolutely, yes. There is one. Take the one very nice example. For instance, is a Vedanta Sutra.
Vedanta Sutra. I read various Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta Sutra explanation by various acharyas, and the sutras are the same. It's like reading different books. They're not the same at all. Because they give explanation by different angles,
perspectives.
So not only we have Vaishnava acharyas like Madhvacharya, Ramanuja, Nimbarka also, and Vallabhacharya wrote a Vedanta Sutra commentary or not? I don't remember. Anyway, all the we have the Madhvacharya, but also we have another commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which has been written by the Gaudiya Vaishnava. So take, which is Srila Baladeva Vidyabhusha. So you take the Vedanta Sutra explained by Madhvacharya, who is a Vaishnava, and take the explanation of Baladeva Vidyabhusha, the famous Govinda Bhashya, with a Gaudiya Vaishnava, and see the difference. We cannot say that Madhvacharya was wrong, or we cannot say that. He's, I know, he's one of the main acharyas of our line. But you read the Govinda Bhashya and you get Radha and Krishna. And you don't get Radha and Krishna in Madhvacharya commentary. You get Vishnu. Because that's the mood. That is called in our philosophy rasa. There are two things. There is tattva and there is rasa. Tattva is the philosophical truth. And rasa is something that is inside. It's a humor. It's a feeling inside the truth that you cannot get from the outside. You have to split the tattvic meaning and see it from a certain angle, from a certain perspective, then you see it differently. The truth is the same, but the perspective is completely different, and you take out of that a completely different teaching. From the same verse that Madhvacharya took Lakshmi Narayana or Vishnu out, but Vibhishana took Radha and Krishna. So what do you prefer to read? Not that you don't like to read Madhvacharya's commentary, it's wonderful, it's extremely intelligent, it's a wonder. I mean, that commentary is really a genial work. But you like it more, the Govinda Bhashya, because you find your Radha Krishna, because you are Radha Krishna devotee. It's a mood. So, I don't know about Isengard, I don't know about... I didn't read it, so I cannot say anything about that. I know that even if he is a Vaishnava, he's not a Gaudiya. If he is not a Gaudiya Vaishnava, then his teaching cannot but be different from ours. And that's, you know, forget about the Yoga Sutra course. It's a general thing. When you hear a Vaishnava and you hear a Gaudiya Vaishnava, is different. You like more Rupa Goswami than to hear Madhvacharya or either others. Because a Gaudiya Vaishnava will talk to you about Vrindavan and Govardhan and Radhakunda, and it's a different flavor. That's what we are. This is what we want to go. This is what we want to hear. It's so sweet to hear it. Just like when Srila Rupa Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu three times. So the first time was in Ramakeli. Ramakeli at that time was the capital of the Gouda state. Basically, the Gouda state is almost all Bengal, not really all the Bengal, but the good part of Bengal. And at that time, Navadvip was not the capital of the state, it was Ramakeli. And in Ramakeli, Rupa Sanatana Goswami used to live there because they were employed by the king, the Nawab. He's not really a king, but anyway, Nawab. And they were living there. So they were writing letters to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to please come. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli, and the second time when he met again Rupa Goswami in Prayag, both of the time he asked Rupa Goswami to go to Vrindavan and write books. Write books on what? On philosophy? Yes, of course, philosophy. But if you read Rupa Goswami's books, are philosophy and rasa. What is rasa again? Rasa is a particular spice that everyone who has a particular, a special realization or a special perspective of Krishna consciousness that puts into his teachings. It's like listening to me or Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu or the other Prabhu or everyone. You get a different thing, because we are different. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted not only Rupa Goswami to write about philosophy, which was a minor part of his work, because philosophy was already there, but he wanted to put rasa, the philosophy of rasa. So that's why we as Gaudiya Vaishnava, when we teach something, we put our rasa inside, and that's unique.
Just a comment and question as well. And just like in the very old days, we had a book that had externally had nothing to do with Krishna, but it was a way to introduce people to some basic Krishna conscious philosophy. Does anyone know what book that is? Higher Taste. It was, you know, just a basic way to introduce people to Krishna. So in a similar way, a program like this, like I've taught Bhagavad Gita classes at yoga studios. Mostly they're teachers that have to be certified, and part of the certification is learning Bhagavad Gita. But there's a lot. If I've already signed Prabhu, I have a teacher that I called her up. I said, I got an expert on the Yoga Sutras. You interested? And she said, yes, I'm coming back to the United States on the 27th. I'm going to call you up. Sign me up. I want him there. So there's a great interest amongst the public. And maybe Prabhu can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, there's the six darshans. There's the six different forms of philosophies. There's the yoga. There's Sankhya. There's Mimamsa, Karma Mimamsa. There's and Vedanta. There's the Nyaya and Vaisheshika. So Nyaya and Vaisheshika related to get together. Karma Mimamsa and Vedanta related, and yoga and Sankhya are related. And Sankhya is the philosophy of Kapiladeva. And most people in the West, the reason why it's good to very important to have a Vaishnava commentary, because in the West, most people look at the Yoga Sutras as not theistic at all. And because there are two different Kapiladevas, there's the atheist Kapiladeva Prabhupada refers to in his purports in the Bhagavatam, and there's the Kapiladeva, the son of Devahuti, who's there in the Bhagavatam. And from what I understand, the Sankhya is like kind of the basic philosophy, and yoga is more of it in practice, or the philosophy in action. And so people look at they're not familiar with Kapila in the Bhagavatam. They're familiar with the teachings of an atheist Kapila, and therefore because he's an atheist and yoga and Sankhya are related together, they think, oh, yoga is also atheistic, as there's no God in the picture. And therefore, if someone could teach about God through this easy method of presenting these seminars, then I think it's good.
One thing I want to say about something very interesting you said about the six systems of yoga. If you look in Srila Prabhupada books, you find Prabhupada blasting all of the six systems, philosophical systems, all of six. And you wonder, how come Srila Prabhupada is blasting Vedanta? How come is that? Vedanta comes from God. And what about Sankhya? You know, Kapila is an avatara. Why is he blast? Because, as Prabhu correctly said, there are doubles on each of these six philosophies. There is the good Patanjali, the false Patanjali. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, yoga is one very dangerous fish in the ocean of nations. That's what Prabhupada says about Patanjali. And then, in another part, he says Patanjali was one of the greatest authority on Vedic philosophy ever, and his book is one of the most authoritative book on yoga. So then you are really, really surprised how Srila Prabhupada could have said, because there are two, just like there are two Kapilas, and there is Vedanta and Sankhya. You know, if you want to have, if someone of you is a philosopher, he has to come in a maybe in a future Sankhya study course. Sankhya is the most wonderful, you know, thing that you can study if you are a philosopher. You know, Sankhya comes from Sank. Who knows what Sank means? Numbers. That's correct. Numbers. So Sankhya is the enumeration the parts of creation, or the elements, or the basic elements of creation, both material and spiritual. So Sankhya teaches you the creation. That's what Sankhya is. And it teaches the material world and spiritual world. It's extremely interesting because it teaches you how Krishna creates and how Krishna created. And Karma Mimamsa is the science of action. There is nothing more interesting than that. It teaches you how to live You know, everything you do, it tells you what to do and what not to do, and the reaction that you get.
How the school or something.
Right, right. And the Vedanta, there is a bad Vedanta and a good Vedanta, depending what anta you put into the Veda. If you why Vedanta it can be a, because your anta may be that there is no God, because because God is not a person. Why? Because some of the Upanishad do not go beyond the impersonal aspects. Just like if I teach you now the Bhagavad Gita, then you go away and said, "Oh, Prabhu said that there is no Bhagavatam." Why? Because he didn't speak about Bhagavatam. It means that Bhagavad does not exist. It's not that it does not exist. I didn't talk to you about Bhagavatam because I didn't want to talk to you about Bhagavatam, because I wanted to concentrate on the Bhagavad Gita. So in that way, that's the logic behind the Upanishad. Some of the Upanishad, or I should say most of the Upanishad, do not go beyond the impersonal aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Because the goal, the aim of the specific Upanishad was to teach the energetic part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You had to teach it. It's necessary to know that part of Krishna. We had to know everything about Krishna. We had to know also how he works his impersonal aspect. So that book, or those books that deals only with the impersonal aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are most of the Upanishad. But to say that the Upanishad, because of the Upanishad, do not talk very much about the Personality of God, then the Personality of God do not exist, that does not make sense, because there are other books who teaches about that. The Vedas are a complete body of books. You cannot take one book and say, "Oh, that's it, it's finished." The Vedas are everything. There are hundreds of thousands of books. You have to read them all. At the end, you have the correct Vedanta, the correct Siddhanta. The Siddha means perfect, perfect. So Anta, the perfect conclusion. If you read them all, if you put everything into context, there is context, which is called Anvayat. That's a word in Sanskrit. That context, to have the context, you have to read them all. Which is impossible. That's why the great Acharyas write some books where the Vedanta is summarized, like the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we, as Srila Prabhupada disciples, we learn Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, that's enough for our perfection. Because he, since he knew it all by transcendental realization, he put into his books the complete and perfect summarization. Is summarization? Yeah. Correct. Summarization of Vedic knowledge. That's why his name was Bhaktivedanta. Because he knew, he realized that the conclusion, anta, of Veda, which means knowledge, was bhakti. But if we want to preach, and that's why Srila Prabhupada said to some of his disciples, go back to university, or to some of the disciples, he said, no, you should study Sanskrit. Or some of the disciples said, no, you should study Plato, because after you discuss with me, I want to talk about Plato, and you should study philosophy. I remember in 75, I was a young devotee, and I was a secretary of the temple at that time. And it came, since I was a secretary, I got the letters. It came a letter directly from Srila Prabhupada, 75. I took this letter and read it, and Srila Prabhupada, writing, hand signed, he said, all the devotees who have some scholastic degree, or even if they don't, but they have some interest in philosophy, history, or any science, or just anything at all about culture, they should come to India, to Vrindavan, because I want to open a college in Vrindavan. So I wanted to go. The GBC stopped me. If I meet again this GBC, I will bite his head. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada was very. So if we want to preach at a certain level, then we study. If we don't, then we don't need to read Vedanta Sutra, we don't need to read anything. We read the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's more than enough from us and from a normal degree, a normal level of preaching. If there is any question more, otherwise we stop here. Mataji, just before Mataji says, I would like all of you to please leave to my wife, Ishwari Devidasi, please to write down your emails. That's all I want, your email. You are going to receive occasionally, maybe once in a month, every 2 months, some news. Okay.
Mataji.
I have a question, but it's not about the Yoga Sutras. Is that okay? I have a question. It's about the Bhagavad Gita. It's chapter 11, text 55. And Srila Prabhupada writes that he said this text is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. And I would really like to, if you would consider studying this and giving a class on this even, because the purport is like 4 pages long and there's so much information about practical work and how to engage in service. And I just wondered if you would consider going in depth and studying this verse. It's 11:55.
11:55. Okay. Okay.
Maybe you want to read the verse.
My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. There is the Bhagavad Gita is like, there are many of these verses who are really essential, who tells you everything basically. So this is a wonderful verse. We surely, if you want me, if anybody comes to classes, I will surely give some explanation.
The purport of the Prabhupada speaks about our work, so it gives some impetus and instruction how we can work in Krishna consciousness, because everyone does work, they work in business, or they do some activity, and it can be very inspiring and encouraging to.
Sure. All right. Yes. Last question then.
Okay. So Lord Chaitanya gave an open instruction that everybody should become guru and deliver the deliver other people in their land. So I was just kind of confirming, because some people are going to be the scholars, some people are going to be the simple workers, the sudras, some people are going to be the vaishyas, some people are going to be all different varieties of people. Everybody becomes devotee. So obviously a lot of people aren't going to have a lot of knowledge, so how is it possible everybody can become a guru?
Guru is a very general term. It might mean a lot of things. Guru doesn't necessarily mean initiating guru or even shiksha guru. Guru means somebody who instructs you, who gives you instruction. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, there are a lot of many types of gurus. Even someone who gave you an indirect instruction can be seen by you a guru. You remember the story, for instance, of Bhivamangala Thakur. Who doesn't know the story of Bhivamangala Thakur? You don't know the story of Bhivamangala Thakur, anyone else? Bhivamangala Thakur was a very high Brahmin, very advanced, but he had a particular attachment, which was
Yeah, no, it's enough. That particular attachment was a sex attachment. So he was very attached to a specific prostitute living in his town. So he used to visit this lady. So one day it was a storm and it was lightning and big wind and he had to cross a river. There were no boats to cross the river. Anyway, he got it. He made it to the prostitute's house. He knocked the door and the prostitute saw him and he saw the storm. He said, "Oh, if you had half, one fraction of determination that you have to come to visit me to find God, you will be a pure devotee." That was an instruction. So Pilvamangala Thakur took his instruction and he taught her to be, in one sense, his guru, because she gave a very important instruction. That doesn't mean that he put her on a vyasasan and worshipped her or anything. You know, it was just that he took the instruction, so in that sense she was a kind of a guru. So we have many different types of guru. Every one of us should be guru in the sense that we should go out and preach and according to our level, according to our understanding, and it will be very effective. You don't need at all to be a big scholar. At the contrary, sometimes big scholars are not at all effective to normal people because they don't understand. You see? So sometimes a very simple devotee who says something, or very friendly. Sometimes the guru are very formal, you know, very serious. Sometimes they even makes you a little, you know, not comfortable because you have to be very careful, respecting, etc. Normal devotee, you know, Hari Bol, how are you? When he tells you something, you take it, you know, very light type of thing. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be some kind of guru. Then, if since initiation is part of our tradition, so much so that Sanatana Goswami says in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that if someone does not take initiation, will not do any advancement in spiritual life. You know, Sanatana Goswami is kind of very strong. He says incredible things. And this Hari Bhakti is very strict. So he says, somebody has to give initiations. But to give initiation, you have to be pure, you have to be qualified. Otherwise, you make mess out of it. So, Siksha Guru or Diksha Guru, a Diksha Guru must be very qualified. And Siksha Guru also must be very qualified, but a kind of different. Although in the Shastra clearly said that there is no difference between Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru. No difference. If you have a Siksha Guru, you should call him Guru Maharaj, etc., etc. No difference whatsoever. Still, when you call somebody Guru Deva, Guru Maharaj, that means that Siksha Guru is the same spiritual level than the Diksha Guru. Then it's a very, very, how you say, very, I don't know the English word, anyway, it's a difficult position. You have to earn it, you have to be sure to be able to stand in this situation, because otherwise you make a mess for yourself and for everybody. So if someone wants to give his life for other people, then he should qualify himself, because I want to give the maximum of help to people, so I must be pure, I will practice purity, and at a certain point the devotee will be blessed by being a Siksha Guru or a Diksha Guru, and then he will go initiating people, etc., etc. Thank you. Hare Krishna.